No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. Over the past several weeks, we've had as guests members of different political parties. We had a Republican we had a Republican a few weeks ago, and last week we had a leader of the Constitution Party. And today we are lucky to have with us another distinguished guest and my friend, Dr. David Schwartzman. Dr. Schwartzman is a professor emeritus at Howard University here in Washington. He holds a BS from City College of New York and an MS and PhD degrees from Brown University. He's a respected scholar, author, and community activist. He has been a peace advocate for more than 50 years and a member of the Green Party for four decades. But before we introduce him, let me say hello to my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who is joining us from the great state of Arizona. Hi, Kathleen. As always, thanks for helping get the conversation started.
Hello, Senator Brown, and welcome to Shadow Politics. How are you doing, Senator?
Good, 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 good.
It was your anniversary yesterday, was it not?
It was.
I really want to give a shout out to your wife, Patty, because I know her really well, and I think she should be put on a pedestal for, what is it, 22 years, 25 years? What is it?
It seems like 25 years, but it's only 22 years. Yeah, 22 well, years.
I just want to shout out to her because she's quite a woman to be married to you and have brought you to where you are now, because you know behind every great man is a greater woman.
Well, you know, she would have left me a long time ago, but we had those three rotten children that all turned out like me. So she kind of she was afraid to be alone with them, and I don't blame her.
Well, I want to welcome Dr. Schwartzman. You're on the line with us, and I know in the past you've called in on our show, but tonight we're going to get a chance to talk to you in depth and get your perspective about some important issues. And as you know, Senator Brown is a liberal Democrat, and we know what he believes because he talks a lot. And I mean, he does. He talks a lot. But what are the basic tenets of the Green Party, and you know, how are you folks different? And I'd also like to ask you, after you answer that question, if you are associated with the Green Party in Europe.
Okay. Thank you so much. It's such a wonderful opportunity, and I thank you both for having me on. Senator Michael Brown just said that I was a member of the Green Party for four decades. That's not exactly accurate. It's close. I joined the Statehood Party as soon as I moved into D.C. That was in 1976. I joined the faculty of Howard University in 73. So that gives me about almost 40 years, but the Statehood Party could be regarded as the first Green Party in the United States, because it had a very strong environmental perspective as well as economic and social justice perspective. But the D.C. Green Party was created in 1996, and it merged with the D.C. Stated Party in 1999 and became the D.C. Stated Green Party. We are an affiliate of the National Green Party of the United States. Now, to get directly to your question, how is it different? Okay, we have a lot of commonality with, I would say, progressive Democrats, but in terms of a party compared to, let's say, the Democratic Party, Here are a few differences. First of all, we do not accept corporate donations to campaigns, period. Two, we are the only national electoral party that unequivocally supports D.C. statehood in our platform. And as Senator Brown knows, the support for D.C. statehood was taken out of the Democratic Party platform, I think, in the early 2002, around there. And to my knowledge, it was not put back. I know that Senator Brown is a strong advocate for D.C. statehood, and many of our Democrats are. I think the local Democratic Party is. But getting back to your question, what are the positions of the Green Party and the D.C. statehood Green Party? Well, I think we'll get into more detail as the conversation goes on. I'd like to actually stress our local platform and what we're about, what we fought for. Oh, and to address your other question about global Green Parties, the Green Party of the United States is a member of Global Greens, which is a kind of a federation of Green Parties from all over the world. That doesn't mean that our party necessarily agrees with everything the other parties do. But they are part of a dialogue and a federation which exchanges views. So that's, for now, I think that's enough.
Okay, that sounds good.
You know what, David, since you brought up the point, Dr. Schwartzman, of your party platform and its support of D.C. statehood, I'd first like to say that it really is an eloquent statement on D.C. statehood that you have in your party platform. It's, it states very clearly that the people of the District of Columbia have the right to self-determination and equality by becoming a state. The Democratic platform, as you know, used to say something similar, but now it kind of hems and haws and talks about some of the elements of statehood, but it doesn't use the word statehood. And you and I have been involved in this struggle long enough to know that that's a really important distinction. You got to say statehood because everything else is less. And, you know, I had this fight with the National Party when we went to Charlotte and we put up billboards that said statehood because the platform didn't say statehood. But my question to you is, why not bring the Green Party into the Democratic Party? Why not try to influence the Democrats to push for things like statehood rather than to have your own party?
That's a good question. And let me say, I support an inside-outside strategy. Okay, I value the work of progressives who work to get better candidates in the Democratic Party and push for a progressive agenda, such as the Progressive Caucus in Congress, and I value their work. However, I think it's really imperative to build a force outside the Democratic Party that unequivocally rejects pay for play. That is an issue that's been brought up locally in terms of campaign contributions coming from the corporate sector, particularly the big corporate sector, who then end up getting favors in terms of contracts. So this is really part of the problem we face nationally. We are becoming more of a plutocracy than a democracy. You know, the influence of wealth, and not even the 1%, it's a 0.1%, that enjoys incredible concentration of wealth in this country now. Gar Apovitz, who's a great champion of more democracy and someone I know very well and has written quite a bit, pointed out he actually quoted recent statistics that 400 individuals in the United States own more wealth than the bottom 180 million Americans taken together.
Oh, my gosh.
And income inequality has grown. Wealth inequality has grown to unprecedented levels. And this also has its expression locally. When I would call the Wilson Building corporate occupied territory. Okay, I don't mind being provocative in my rhetoric, and I don't like to single out individuals. I'm talking about a structure, which actually, since shortly before the control board was implemented, the policies of which you can call urban structural adjustment have been implemented in our city. And there are many dimensions to this. I think we'll get into this further. But and let me just make a final point for now. I'm a climate scientist. My energies now, even though I'm retired, I work very hard on the climate issue and on implementing a program to prevent climate catastrophe. This is the biggest threat to humanity right now. And it has, of course, local effects and impacts. And we could do much better in confronting this challenge. And I think we need to build the Green Party nationally and locally to actually raise this issue in a very principled way, particularly focusing on what our presidential candidate focused on, Jill Stein. A matter of fact, she ran in the last election. Her centerpiece was a Green New Deal, which means confronting the converging crises of climate, economics, and social crises together. And
No, that's okay. When I'm doing some research, something that popped up that fits right into what you're saying about in Washington State, I don't know what community it is, but they have a bill that would ban or would put on a label that food that is genetically engineered. And they were talking about how the impact, it's like, I don't know, there's been an amazing amount of money contributed to against the labeling of this. And it was coming from outside the state of Washington, coming from corporations who, of course, or the industry behind that wants to genetically, engineer food, which would, I guess, help in this crisis of the climate change. Because what we're going to be seeing is we're going to be seeing more drought and less crop, and so this is kind of their answer. And so it's kind of interesting because it kind of all ties in, and it concerned me when I was looking at kind of what you were saying and what you just said, is that's a whole nother thing we have to be worried too, don't we, about
exactly,
this?
Exactly. And by the way, we oppose GMO, genetically modified organism approach to agriculture. We favor ecological approach to agriculture, what you would call agroecology, permaculture, organic agriculture, for several reasons. One of the hazards of inserting a gene from one organism into another, this is not traditional hybridization that's been practiced for thousands of years, crossing two whole organisms. That's the difference. And GMO uses fossil fuel input. It uses nitrate fertilizers, just like industrial agriculture did. And that is contributes to global warming because nitrates break down in the soil and produce nitrous oxide, which is a greenhouse gas. It's not the main one, but it contributes. I'm actually a biogeochemist. That's my scientific specialty. And that's what I've done research on for the last 40 years or so. And now I'm focusing on more, including more practical approaches to this issue. In particular, a number of us have, including myself, have been involved in Sustainable DC. Mm-hmm. This was a very welcome project, which many D.C. residents participated in. I was in the Green Economy Working Group. You know what our highest priority was?
What's
that? Public bank. And I could talk more about that. I happen to be on the steering committee of a project to implement a D.C. public bank, just like North Dakota. It's called the D.C. Public Banking Center. And you can Google it and find the website. But this is a way of getting sovereignty over our money, just like we want sovereignty over our, you know, in the form of self-determination, over our politics, over our political system by statehood. I think, yes.
No, I was just going to say, David, I didn't want to cut you off, but I want to stay on Jill Stein for a minute, because
yes,
she was your presidential candidate, but she finished fourth behind the Libertarian candidate, and she only got a fourth as many votes. He got three times as many votes, yes. I'm sorry, as she did. So why isn't your message, do you have any idea why this message isn't resonating with people, the Green Party message? It's not even resonating as much as the Libertarian Party.
Good question. First of all, I think the Libertarians are much better financed by the corporate sector. We agree in part with their program in terms of the real concerns about surveillance, about an interventionist foreign policy that serves the corporate sector at the expense of the American people. But in terms of their economic policies, they're anti-union. They want to abolish the income tax and so forth. We reject that. We're for economic justice. Now, why did Jill Stein got over 400,000 votes? That's the best performance by a member of the Green Party. Remember, Nader was not a member of the Green Party. He was much more well-known. So she improved our performance, and actually I was very pleased with the impact she made that goes far beyond the votes. As a matter of fact, she beat out the Libertarian in D.C., the only state in the nation. She, wannabe state, which should be a state. She beat out the Libertarian a candidate, and you can go to the D.C. Board of Elections and Ethics and check the vote. let me
also point out that Dr. Schwartzman, who was a candidate in the last election, got more votes in D.C. than Mitt Romney. I was going to mention
that.
I think that's important.
Also, my Republican opponent, and I don't regard you really as an opponent. You are more like a dialogue opponent.
We were synergizing
our campaign. Of course, I wanted to replace you, Michael, sort of, but I knew it was an uphill battle. I am seriously considering running again for the U.S. Senate position. And I won't mention who I'm running against. Well, perhaps I should. Paul Strauss, Senator Paul Strauss. But I would like to join you in a team of Democrat and State of Green Party in raising the level of our struggle for D.C. statehood. I'd like to speak to that issue more a little later, but
yeah.
I have some ideas on that.
Well, and you know, locally, I mean, nationally, you've attracted Cynthia McKinney was a good candidate, I think. And, you know, you've even attracted the bizarre people like Roseanne Barr. But locally in the Green Party in D.C., we've had a lot of really good people, including one of my heroes, which was Hilda Mason. I mean, nationally, yeah. She's probably not known, but locally, you and I both know what a great lady she was and what an example she was. So working together with you, David, losing to you.
I know you're going to support Paul Strauss, but I know what your ideas are about. Okay.
but I love you anyway, David. I mean, I don't know who I'm going to support at this point. But
no,
I think it's important to have candidates like you people that are concerned about the community. Let me tell you, I've known Mr. Schwartzman, Dr. Schwartzman, for a while now. He's not in it for the money. He's not in it for the fame. He's in it to make his community better, and he deeply believes in what he does. And no matter who wins or loses, if we can develop candidates like that and put them, you know, have them as part of the political process, then we'll always win. And let me just say about your earlier comments about the Wilson Building. I have an office in the Wilson Building, and I'm embarrassed to go in there. It's such a pay-for-play a situation that it's embarrassing. We've lost several council. The head of our city council has resigned. A long-time friend of mine stole $350,000 from the Little League. The other Michael Brown, as we now call him, took $55,000 in bribes. It's terrible. Kathleen and I used to work with Michael's father, by the way.
Yeah, we worked with
respected.
Right, yeah. With Mr. Brown. And let me state this to both of you. I mean, I know that part of the Green Party is about bringing the government back to your local localities. Like, say, I came back from New York City and moved back to my small town of Douglas on the Mexican border. I have never seen so much corruption before in my life. I was amazed by it. It made New York City and D.C. look like kindergarten class. And then it made me really worry when I heard the conservative Republicans or the people who believe in that more in state right than the federal government, because I would not want those people who are in the city council and the mayor at this point, and my father was mayor at one point, and he tried very hard to get things worked out, and the corruption was so steep. It had been there for so long, like 30, 40 years, that it was impossible for him to do it in 4 years. And it made me wonder, I think I would have to leave the country if all of a sudden our policy changed and we want the local, you know, municipalities running it like D.C. You know, I mean, you got a lot of corruption in D.C. How are you guys going to change that so that local people will get involved in their politics, realize that the city council or their local governments are so important, and get honest people to get into that kind of field?
That's a very good question. I testified at the hearing in July on the financing of elections, political elections. People can go to the D.C. State of Green Party website and get that testimony. I testify that our party supports public financing option for campaigns. Of course, until the Citizens United decision of the Supreme Court is repealed, which it should be, even President Obama said it should be out, okay? Until that's repealed, then you apparently a local jurisdiction cannot mandate just public financing, which it should be public financing. But there are other measures that could be done. We could lower the maximum contribution made to $100. Now it's $1,000 for at large. There was actually an initiative in the early 90s which lowered it to 100, and then Jack Evans was instrumental in repealing that. And there are other measures that could be done. Not only banning LLC contributions, but having more restrictions of really teeth in the banning pay-for-play. That was actually a public citizen had a piece in today's Washington Post on this issue. So that's one way to address this issue of corruption. But we need to get people on the council that are not beholden to the big corporate sector, the big developers who've been gentrifying this community. Now, I am not I welcome new residents, whatever income they are, but they need to recognize that the majority of people that live in D.C. now suffer from the lack of income. This is a fact. They suffer from income insecurity. A quarter of them, almost a quarter of them, are on food stamps in the district. 144,000 residents are on food stamps. And the feds just, of course, Congress mandated a cut in that. That's also been written up recently in the press. So that's going to hurt people. We have one of the highest child poverty rates in the nation. We have almost the highest income inequality in the nation. And that in itself is not only translates into a human rights violation. Child poverty is a human rights violation. Poverty is a human rights violation. And I say that because we need to measure and assess the performance, not only the federal government, but our local government, in terms of the human rights record. I was part of the process to get the D.C. government officially a human rights city, the first one in the nation. Okay, that was done in December 2008, and 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago, we issued a report on how well D.C. has done in fulfilling its commitment to implement human rights. And I'll tell you, in a number of areas, D.C. got F's. We did a report card. It got F's. Child poverty, well, one. Tax budget issues got an F. And others got low grades. And this is part of an assessment to really, the message here is that D.C. could do a lot better even without more federal aid. We could do a lot better for our residents. Let me mention a couple of areas. One, we have a regressive local tax structure. That is, residents, families earning $50,000 pay the highest tax rate of all the residents. Almost 11% of their income goes into D.C. taxes. Millionaires are paying to about 6% of their income. It's steadily regressive from 50,000 up. And I'm testifying, I submitted testimony to the D.C. Tax Revision Commission. I'm testifying again on November 12th on this issue. There is an alternative because there's a huge amount of income which is concentrated in the upper brackets in D.C. Millionaires have a taxable income of about $3 billion. And they're paying the lowest tax rate, even slightly lower than the poorest residents that are earning just over $12,000 a year. Families earning $12,000 a year, which basically in poverty, are paying a slightly higher effective tax rate than millionaires. Now, this has to be changed. The majority of folk need to get tax relief, and the top 5% need to pay a modestly higher rate, and that would actually generate more revenue that can go into underfunded programs. And I'll give you one example. Temporary assistance for needy children. With the food stamp benefit, it's 60% of poverty in D.C. 60% of poverty. And it should be raised, as I testified at Jim Graham's hearing, not too long ago, it should be raised at least above poverty. We have the tax base to do that, and of course the Fed should contribute more. We need to conduct that fight as well. But we need a Green Party nationally too, because a Green Party that really speaks directly to these issues of economic social justice would actually empower progressive Democrats. And move the whole national agenda to a more progressive direction that really tackles these challenges that I mentioned. And let me say just one other thing for now about Hilda Mason. She was a great champion of statehood. There's no doubt about it. But let me point out, she wasn't perfect. And let me point out, actually, what got me involved in the local scene really intensively was around 1996. This was before the control board was implemented. They had a vote in the city council of whether to put a cost of living on aid for dependent children. That was the predecessor of temporary assistance for needy right. families. And did you know that only one person voted for the COLA, cost of living adjustment? And that's actually in the recent bill that Jim Graham and Marion Barry have championed. Only one person voted for it. It wasn't Hilda Mason. She voted against it. Harry Thomas Sr.
Well, I will tell you that there are so few of us, David, that are perfect. But Hilda, I'm sure she wasn't perfect. She was a politician, and the art of politics is compromise. And so that's really what I would interest me is your opinion on what we can do. Because, you know, I used to be in charge of FEC, not compliance, but I was the guy that took in all the money at the DNC. And there were a lot of rules and regulations about taking money, but we never found any money we couldn't take because the rules were written by politicians. So they left loopholes in them that were big enough to drive a truck through, you know. And if you couldn't give more than $25,000 to federal elections, we just use the money for state and local elections. We'd find some way to use your money. So that's the big problem. How do we get it out? And when it comes to children, that's another thing. They don't have a constituency. You know, they don't vote. So we talk about them all the time. But when it comes to government policies, the first damn thing we cut is education. It kills me that we have high schools, and I know that this is an issue for you too because you're such a well-educated man, but we have a high school in Washington, D.C. where 51% of the people do not graduate. It's more likely that you will fail than you will succeed in one of the wealthiest cities in America, and we have more people per capita in the district with graduate degrees than any other city in the world, but yet we can't, in Anacostia High School, which is in one of the poorest neighborhoods in the city, we can't get even the majority of the kids through high school.
And with that statement, I just want to tell the audience that there must be people out there who are listening to this conversation that have questions. So I encourage you, please call us at 888-429-5471. Again, 888-429-5471, or you can Skype us at BBS Radio 2.
Okay. Could I just mention two things that I kind of overlooked that
sure.
we brought up, actually? One is, yes, we've had candidates that have been unsuccessful. It's true. Am I on right now?
Yeah,
yes,
you are.
You are.
Okay. Let me give you an example of one who I worked very hard for and I thought was an outstanding candidate. And that was Perry Redd that ran in the special election. He did not do well. There was reasons for that. People wanted to defeat Patrick Mara. Okay?
Right.
So they chose the instrument to do so, and it turned out to be Anita Barnes, who... Now, Perry influenced the discourse. He influenced the debate. He was the first to come out for a living wage. And then everyone else jumped on. As a matter of fact, Anita Barnes voted for it, and then she reversed her vote. He was the only candidate that ran in that election that opposed the closure of the neighborhood public schools east of the river. And that is tied to our position regarding education. We need to support public education. And what was just referred to in regarding what Michael just referred to in terms of failure and dropout, the key element is to address the family and poverty. If you, Michelle Reese said, pretended this is irrelevant. No, it is relevant. the best education scholars in the country recognize that, like Diane Rabbits. And you should read her book.
She's really, really good. She's a leader in education, especially in New York City, right, Diane Rabbits?
Yes. Well, she has really done a critique of, quote, education reform. And this approach has caused a lot of harm in education. Let's put it that way. We could get into more detail. I am an educator, you know, and I had a long experience there. And let me say just one element of this, teaching to the test.
Yes.
That's really so destructive. We need to encourage critical thinking of the students. We need to motivate their curiosity, which they naturally have, and get away from this over-testing. We need to get the parents more involved. And if they are suffering the injuries of poverty and substance abuse and mental health issues, we need to address that. And that's a reality in D.C.
Let me ask you, just because of you guys are very versed in D.C. politics, but for the rest of us in the country, when you were talking about that, Mr. Reed, were you talking about a city council race?
Yes.
Perry Redd.
Is that a recent city council?
Yes.
In a special election.
Yes. Okay.
Special election.
And I would add to that
I'm
running.
I'm sure we're going to run someone for at large in this coming election.
And that was because the person that they replaced.
November 8th, which a lot of the prospective candidates will go down and file and get their nomination papers.
Yes.
So you look out for the papers, look out for the reports, or go to the D.C. Board of Elections and Ethics website, and you'll find out. But we will run candidates for the offices.
Let me just say that running an election, as you pointed out with Perry, what Perry did, we've seen that happen a lot of times in the district recently. We had a guy that they considered crazy. His name was Suleiman Brown. But let's be honest, what he did was he uncovered all sorts of corruption in the District of Columbia. We had with the mayor's campaign and with other things that were going on. We also, wasn't his name Tim Day who ran against Harry Thomas, and it was his candidacy that uncovered the taking of money, the stealing of money from the Little League. So candidates, you know, you don't have to win necessarily. You don't have to win to change this the system, but there can be a lot of positive things that come out of
it. Let me ask this of both of you, because this is the thing that I get from people when they know we're talking about statehood for D.C., is it's well known that D.C. is very corrupt, and you've got a lot of politicians there who seem the agenda, or it's almost like, well, you become elected so you can make money. So how do you get people in D.C. who are not part of that agenda to run? Because, you know, I've gone out and I've helped Michael run his campaigns, and it's, you know, it's a very difficult thing when you're not part of that party, you know, stream, you know, to be able to make that change is so huge. And so many of the wards seem to me to be bought into this corruption thing. So what do you do to make such an impact, to make such a change? I mean, what's the first steps you take? It just seems like it's a huge, huge task.
Yes. First, there's a number of things. Besides the changes in our campaign financing laws, I would also suggest that we implement instant runoff voting. This would allow more diversity in our council. We have a one-party rule in D.C. It's one party.
Yeah.
Well, it's basic, and that in itself feeds corruption.
Right.
When you have a monopoly of one party, I mean, I'm not writing off all of the council people, but that in itself is encourages the corruption. Also, being a colony in itself encourages corruption.
Absolutely.
But let's not forget that political corruption is systemic in this country. You can look all over the country in states that and cities that have corruption and where the politicians went to jail.
You're very right. Let me just state, Douglas is also like D.C. It is run by one party. The Republicans don't even bother to show up. There are a lot of Republicans in Douglas who just, I don't know, they give up. They don't even have a party. They just say, okay, well, that's the way it is and that's the way it's going to be. But you're right. You're right. Where one party dominates definitely breeds corruption.
Well, and I would also say that the remark you made about being a colony, all you have to do is read a book about any one of the Caribbean countries that were colonies of Great Britain, and you will see so many similarities between the corruption and the sort of things that go on in D.C. And I hesitate to say that sometimes because I think people think that sounds crazy, but it's absolutely true. Here in Washington, we focus on national politics. We don't focus on what's going on locally. So these guys do whatever they want to do. And so I think that being a colony is certainly a major problem. But as you bring this up, David, and given what Kathleen has just said, why do we want to get your party platform in the Green Party is to bring government down to the people and have it go from the bottom up, it seems. Yeah. And so why do we want to do that when local governments are even more corrupt? It's harder to corrupt the federal government. So why not accept the authority of the federal government the way the Constitution does? Your platform says lesser bodies like neighborhood boards and county governments must have subpoena power over state governments, and they in turn should have subpoena power over Congress. How does that really help us?
Well, I think it's bottom-up democracy. As yes, we need representative democracy too. But the more bottom-up democracy, the more participation of people in the process, in the mechanisms, and in the policies that affect their life, the more the accountability could be implemented. That's the way we see it, because we need more bottom-up control. And as a matter of fact, it's not only Greens who think that. There's a Main Street Republicans, by the way, think that. Even some Tea Party folk who aren't completely brainwashed by the Koch brothers, they are in many states are now supporting public banks because that's more accountable to the people, like North Dakota has. We need more democracy at every level. That's the point. I don't want to abolish the city council. We want a state legislature with more representation. Let's spread it out. Let's give with instant run of voting. That would have ability to break the one-party monopoly, because people can express their preferences without having to worry about voting for a lesser evil again. So much of the voting, like in the special election we just had, folk voted for Democrat because they wanted to defeat the Republican. If they had an option for ranking the candidates and then the first round no one got a majority, then lo and behold, there would be certainly more support for the most progressive in the race, because I think the majority of people in D.C. have very progressive views about most of the issues, and it's not being expressed in the system we have now.
Well, I agree with that, but I think the problem with runoff voting personally is it's like term limits. It's they're outside manipulations of the system and effort to protect ourselves from ourselves. I think the majority of people, whoever gets the most votes, ought to win, David. That's the way I feel, you know, that majority should rule. And this runoff voting, because you have eight candidates in a council race and the top two or three of them are close, nobody gets 51%. I just don't – I don't see how that helps the system. I really don't.
And listening to both of you, because you're very DC-oriented, it just scares the heck out of me, because when you look at these, some of these small towns that are – or small communities that have corruption, if there's nowhere that you can go as a citizen above your local city, then, you know, city council or neighborhood – you know, neighborhood governing boards or whatever you may have, I don't see – regular people in that town going to go and get involved, because, you know, in a small town, the mayor or whoever's in the city council or whoever is part of the corruption that leads that corruption usually is the main employer of that place. So if you go against the corruption, you're going against the person who has your job or who has a connection to your job. So there has to be a real way of being able to go outside your local neighborhood to be able to ask for help, because your place is so corrupted. So,
I agree with that. But let me give you an example of how Green Party in the United States has made a difference. And this is in a city, Richmond, California. They have sort of nonpartisan election there, but the mayor is a member of the Green Party of California. Mm-hmm. Gail McLaughlin. And you know what? She pushed and she implemented, with the support of the local government, eminent domain to stop the foreclosures of working class folk that are being forced out of their home. This is a brilliant innovation, using the existing law to protect the working class and low-income community and middle class. I mean, the middle class is shrinking into the poor. What's happening to the middle class. Bernie Sanders has been a champion, an eloquent spokesman of pointing out the destruction of the middle class in the United States. And that's because of the growing concentration of wealth and income in the top. We have a 0.1%. That's pretty much running the show in so many respects, and that's why we need more democracy from the bottom. So,
let me point out that that Senator Sanders is also a co-sponsor of our statehood bill. He's a great guy, and we appreciate him. How do we get people on board with this? I mean,
well, how do you get people involved? That's another question, because we talked a lot on our show about that.
That's that. Let me just briefly address that. And being concrete in our local situation, I mentioned urban structural adjustment. These are policies which really hurt the majority of our residents. Okay? And it basically acted to disempower our struggle for self-determination and statehood. Plus, folk that are struggling around their crisis of everyday living, how are they going to pay the rent? How are they going to buy shoes for their kids and buy food and so on? Don't have the time and energy to get involved in what should be a mass struggle for D.C. statehood. So the issues are interrelated. We need to empower the struggle for D.C. statehood by addressing the economic and social environmental crisis that people face. And when I say environmental, let's be specific. Epidemic of childhood asthma because of air pollution in D.C., which comes from burning coal and, of course, from cars and trucks and diesel, which particulates, which actually hurt adults, too. It has a direct link between these particulates and cancer and heart disease. So every resident should be concerned about this. And so that we need to empower the struggle for statehood by addressing the economic, social concerns of the challenges that people face. And unfortunately, our local government has really neglected that. And actually, we're going backwards in many respects. If you actually look at the statistics of that measure the indices of quality of life. And if we improve the quality of life, of the poor and low income and middle class, we improve the quality of life of everyone in the community, whatever their income. That's basically where we stand and how we are different from, I think, the mainstream of the Democratic Party and certainly the Republican Party.
So let me get this straight. If you increase or if you make the quality of life better, do you think, I mean, to me, I find it amazing that not that there isn't, you should have every D.C. resident just marching on the streets every day to get statehood. Yet I've seen in the past where it's hard to get enough people to come to a rally. I mean, but you think through, and I understand the issue of, well, you know, you're really concerned about how you're going to pay the rent and how you're going to clothe your child and all that. Those are your most important concerns, and then maybe statehood comes after that. But is that your answer in a sense then? It's to try to deal with that?
Well, I think that, you know, I don't want to answer for David, but I do think that what he's saying, we've realized for a while that we need to connect the dots and we need to show people that those issues that they're concerned about, like feeding their children and clothing their children and the healthcare concerns that David talks about, which, by the way, we have the highest incidence of breast cancer and one of the highest incidences of diabetes as well in Washington, D.C., that some of that's a result of the fact that we lose $2 billion a year by not being able to tax revenue at its source, and we need to tie those issues into our colonial status because it really does have an effect. And if you don't connect the dots for people, they say, we're never seeing, you know, it's been this way for 210 years. It's never going to change.
Well, I would say to you guys that we have a commonality because in Douglas, we have the highest rate of diabetes than any other border town along all across Texas, California, the whole thing. Diabetes rate in Douglas is extremely high, and it also has the most uninsured children. I think we're 200% below the poverty rate. A family of four makes $18,000. We're the poorest part of the whole state of Arizona, which is, you know, that's even something to be said because Arizona is not the greatest place. It's a right-to-work state. So, you know, that the poverty definitely, you know, maybe that's how they keep us all dumb and down because we're struggling just to survive health-wise and to feed and clothe our kids. So I don't know. Maybe that's it.
Let me tell you, David, you have a real opportunity here because on the last show, my longtime Democratic cohort here announced that she was becoming an independent because she didn't like the Democratic Party anymore. Yeah. So maybe you can woo her. Maybe you can woo her over to the Green Party.
It's between
you're certainly welcome. We'll welcome you with open arms.
I'm looking for a new home. I'm looking for a new home because I'm just fed up with both parties.
The Green Party, believe me.
Well, that might be something I'm looking into because I think there's a lot of people like me. I was born, you know, my grandfather was Democrat. We had John F. K. You know, it was Jesus Christ, the Pope, and John F. K. And I didn't ever think of being anything other than a Democrat. And when I was growing up, Democratic policies really helped me, really helped my family, you know, and that whole thing. But now when I go back to what, you know, my grandfather in his story had Goldwater, Udall, had all the leaders of Arizona come to this little town in Perryville on the Mexican border for him to help them get the vote. And when I went back there after being in New York and D.C., I was shocked at how corrupt it had become. I mean, to the point where it just breaks my heart. And it got me so disgusted. Then when we went to the county, that was corrupt. And I don't really think the state is that much better because what I see both parties doing, it doesn't matter what you stand for. It doesn't matter what, you know, it means. It's just getting that vote. That's all that matters. And how you do it doesn't count. Just get the vote. Whether you've got to be corrupt, whether you got to steal the votes, whether you got to cheat, and whether you got to go in and actually say you're somebody else and put somebody else's name on the ballot, or do a whole big thing on voter absenteeism, which to me is one of the biggest fraudulent things that happen in our system is this voter absenteeism, because anybody can turn in a voter absentee vote. My son could open it up and vote Republican and turn it in, and my name's on there. I mean, so I've become very disenfranchised by both parties, and I'm looking for a new home.
Well, you're not gonna get them by cheating. Look, we've run out of time.
Are you serious?
I'm sorry. Yeah, we have. And Dr. Schwartzman, thank you so much. And we want to
have you back
because there's so much more to discuss. But usually we close out the show with give the people the right to vote. And today we didn't take a break, but we want to play John Lennon's Imagine. I went to a party for Dr. Schwartzman. They played that. And this is a tribute to you, David, because you're one of the good guys. And we want to wish you a happy birthday. And we're going to leave you with this thought, this simple thought from John Lennon, which is as true today as the day he wrote it.
Thank you.
Finally, that song and Working Class Hero are my favorites from that great scenario. Thank you.
Coming on, and we want to have you back on because I want to ask you about gun control.
Yeah, we haven't even gotten to
a lot of the issues.
Listen to us, America. Tune in next week, and thank you, and thanks, Dr. Schwartzman. Here's John Lennon with a little advice for all of us.
Give the people their right to vote.